So the first presentation for this afternoon is on estate planning best practices, and it's going to be presented by Jessica Newell. Jessica is a shareholder, and she serves as the chair of the estate planning and probate practice of Gardner Law, and she got her JD from University of Missouri, Kansas City in 2008, and she's been in Texas practicing. She's board certified in estate planning and probate, and is going to teach us all about best practices.
Good afternoon. Hopefully, usually they put the least desirable speakers at the end of the last day, so you're welcome. So I started out doing estate planning and probate in my career, and then, you know, got board certified, did all that stuff, and then basically completely transitioned to litigation. So I've done all the things that I'm going to talk about today, but primarily focused on what I see from a litigation aspect as far as estate planning goes, things that you maybe should do or shouldn't do when you're doing estate planning, because I know a lot of people here probably do focus a lot on estate planning. So in the paper, I started out with the beginning, I guess, which is the initiation of the attorney-client relationship when you have a client come in to engage you for estate planning or just contact you. And looking through this in the lens of a context, it's really a contest. It's important that even the initial client contact in estate planning can be very important in a contest later on. Of course, we don't control who picks up the phone and calls our office to ask for the services, but how you react to that and what you do within your file can be reflected in a contest later. So in a perfect world, the client themselves picks up the phone or emails you to get estate planning services. Obviously, we know that doesn't always happen. A lot of times it's a child, a caregiver, a sibling, some other third party that's contacting you. But obviously the reason we want contact, if it can be, from the client directly is, first off, it shows they want planning if they are reaching out to you. If a third party reaches out to you, we don't know if that person really had, the underlying client had any interest in planning or not, if they're being forced into it by someone else. It shows they're competent enough to use a phone, which, believe it or not, has been quite a few of my cases where a person can't use a phone or doesn't have a phone. It shows that hopefully they can use a computer and an internet if they're finding you or some other means of finding you. And so if you can paper that client contacted you initially, if you anticipate a contest, that can be useful. I had a case recently where the attorney put in their billing statements in a estate planning case, initial contact from, and it's not the client, right? It's this third party. And it basically, they started drafting all the documents based off this initial contact with no contact from the client at all. And then later, they show up at this person's house with the documents. So that's obviously a suspicious situation. You also need to be very cognizant when you're talking to, whether it be the client or the potential client's representative, about what you put in writing. Because I'll talk about a little later that in a contest, anything in your file is probably going to be discoverable. That may be your emails, that may be your billing statements, notes. And so if you're writing down notes in an email casually as someone's telling you these facts, and you send that off, that's going to be discoverable, probably. And so you need to think about what you put there. You don't want to say, you know, spoke to John Doe who called on behalf of so-and-so, drafted documents, went to unduly influence so-and-so to sign documents. I mean, I swear to you, that's the kind of stuff, it's not as blatant usually, but that's the kind of stuff you see in a contest.